Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Yes, yes, everybody! You know the drill. We've started this podcast to help anyone who is remotely interested in trapping and neutering animals. We're the help we did not receive when we first wanted to get involved, and we want to be your new besties in the TNR world. I'm Alex, one of your hosts for this ride, and I'm so grateful to have Adele by my side. Hey, Adele!
Hey, Alex. Thanks for the intro. Today, we're pretty excited because it's our first episode not related to cats and talking about another species. So today, we are talking about pigeons, specifically taking care of feral pigeons and feral pigeon population management. Our guest today is Billy from Portugal. And just a little bit of background about Billy. So during the last decade, Billy has worked full-time in animal and environmental activism. In 2020, this led to a personal call to action on behalf of the feral pigeons all around us in the cities that we see every day, particularly in urban environments. And this involved the setting up of a pigeon advocacy foundation in the Netherlands. Now, she currently devotes most of her time to the treatment and rehabilitation of birds, especially pigeons, and is an expert hand capture. She recently relocated her nearly 200 rescued, disabled, homeless, and non-returnable pigeons from the Netherlands, where she was doing rescue, to Portugal, where she now runs a sanctuary. Her background is also in physical rehabilitation through movement, which has helped her recover and return the many pigeons she has rehabilitated. So welcome, Billy. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. And thanks for highlighting pigeons.
Yay! We're so excited to talk about pigeon. It's we see them every day, but we don't talk about them much. So very excited. But just to gently start the conversation, I have a question. How did you first start caring about animal rights?
Well, I've always cared about animals, but the whole thing of animal rights, I think that sort of entered my radar through the internet. And I started going to marches, protest, that kind of thing. And then it just kept snowballing. I started organizing various groups. I volunteered full-time for a group called Animal Rebellion in 2019, relocated to London for 3 months for that. So it kept on growing once I started with it.
Yeah, when you first start, then the roll keeps rolling and then...
Yeah, start with small things and then, kept going. I always felt that we have to do more than just be aware of it. We have to take some kind of action. I think I felt that quite strongly.
Well, I feel like it's exactly the same with pigeons, right? Because we're aware of them and we're aware that, there might be an overpopulation and we're aware that some of them get hurt in the city, but not many people actually do something about it. So I think our first question is, what inspired you to start working with pigeons?
Yeah, well, I think that it also has to do with the fact that pigeons are a species that is suffering the problems that all stray animals suffer. And being in the Netherlands at that point, that was the most visible and obvious version of that daily suffering that you actually see. If I were living in another country, I might have been more involved with stray dogs or maybe even like stray cats. But in the Netherlands, they're not so much in your face. The pigeons were sort of obvious because you go out and you see them in front of you lying at your feet, So it was kind of obvious to start with that. But I think that it always just starts with one pigeon. And I first became aware of the fact that many of them needed help in 2020 when during the lockdowns, I started spending much more time outdoors because my work was completely halted. I worked in exercise studios and, group facilities where a lot of groups congregate, and that was all closed down. So I started spending more time outdoors, and then I just was confronted by it much more than in the past. And I was already in a frame of mind to take action on a lot of things because of all the activism I'd been doing. So I was already connecting this, well, we need to have a movement, an advocacy organization. I need to create some groups, and do Zoom calls about this. So it sort of just went from there quite fast as soon as I was aware of the problem. And once you're aware of a problem, you see it even more. So it kind of goes from there. And the more you know, the more you see, the more aware you are, the more you're going to get involved in it and see more and more aspects that need to be addressed.
Yeah, definitely. And when I first became aware of your page, you were in the Netherlands and you were reporting on the daily incidents of pigeon need that you would get sent to or that you would find yourself going out and feeding and checking on your flocks. And you were documenting a lot of the medical cases like string foot and infections and wounds and things like that that they were struggling with. And you made a lot of informational content on how to de-string or how to identify different types of illnesses. And I think this was really interesting to me because it's very similar, as you said before, what we do with free roaming cats and dogs. We see similar things like cats who are wounded or mm-hmm. cats who need help. And, you know, we report on it to each other and we do what we can. So just as you said, like pigeons, like cats and dogs are another kind of urban animal who they're not wild. They're not fully domesticated. They're kind of in this mid-range of species that are dependent on us. And therefore we live around them and therefore they need some help.
Yeah, we're also kind of responsible for their situation to some extent. So to some extent, humans have created this problem. So there's this relationship which goes beyond, we cannot turn the dogs back into wolves, you know, we have to see it as it is and you know, have a healthy relationship with these animals and a duty of care, I would think.
Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself. And recently you made a pretty big move with all of the pigeons you had rescued to Portugal to start a more established sanctuary. Can you tell us why and what that process was like?
Yeah, well, I was doing the work from my flat in Amsterdam, third floor flat, just typical flat. And, you know, that's fine if you're rescuing one or two pigeons or if you want to have maybe five or something in your living room. But I was having hundreds and they were only coming in, and with every pigeon that was brought to me, a big percentage of them were unreleasable, you know, broken wings, never going to fly so well in the future, this kind of thing. So for many years, I was taking trips, sometimes 2-3 day trips to other countries, particularly Germany, almost to Czech Republic, to go to sanctuaries to rehome some of the birds into sanctuaries that met the standards that I would consider to be safe. But it was getting harder and harder. I mean, all the sanctuaries are full and there was always going to be more pigeons than I could bring or get acceptance for. So for quite a long time, I was very aware that this is just logistically impossible, you know, can't go on like this. I'm going to have to make a move, but where, how, you know, and how to continue the rescue work at the same time. I think that was the biggest problem. If I'm not here, what's going to happen to all the pigeons that people are calling me about every day? But at a certain point, you get to the point where you absolutely cannot go on as you are. I had to make the move. So I did. I had to. And now they have much more space. It's just way better to do this work when you're not trying to do it from a small flat. So I'm kind of like a farmhouse cottage now and plans to move to a bigger place in the future.
And are you still rescuing in the Netherlands?
Remotely. I mean, I have some friends that were intimately connected with the foundation, people that came to events and then started doing rescue work. You know, people I can trust, people who were helping with the logistical things. I don't drive, so I had a friend that could always drive me to the vet every week. And so it's not on the same level because they simply can't handle, you know, many of the work full time. They can't handle that someone's calling them 24 hours a day for pigeons. But on select cases, I'm getting them to foster the pigeons for a while and, you know, sending them to the vet and giving advice and treatment. And actually, I moved at the end of January here. And then in the 3.5 months since then, we've been having like a steady little drip of new cases coming in. And they just arrived an hour before we're on this conversation. If you see behind me, they just got off the courier, 13 more pigeons from the Netherlands. So this is the first official shipment from the Netherlands that has come here to the sanctuary. That's how I plan to do it. And I just hope that we can get more people involved so that this can be more streamlined, so that I don't feel that by leaving the city that all the pigeons are then not going to have the help, because no one person can do it on their own. You need a network and we just need more people.
Yeah, so talking about people, how do you feel like people feel about feral or urban pigeons? Do you think it's the same way about how people feel about stray cats in Greece?
I think all stray animals are seen as a nuisance and seen negatively, and often it's also a learned discrimination. I think it's also quite superficial discrimination. I think it can be changed. So that's the positive thing. For instance, if you go to some, I was brought up in a lot of Asian countries, so I'm very aware of the suffering of some other species as a child seeing that. So if you go to some countries, dogs are seen by everyone as dirty and a nuisance and should be kicked and have rocks thrown at them. And you go to some Western countries and it's God spelled backwards, you know? And these things are just quite superficial memes that are learned. And I think that we can change those attitudes. But when an animal is a stray, they don't belong to anyone, they're dirty, they're covered in fleas or whatever, I think most humans are just not going to feel any respect or see any value in them. So I think working to that we help strays, that we create better conditions for them, that they're not strays anymore, is going to make a big change in how people see those animals as well. So as soon as pigeons are no more just fending for themselves, trying to steal food from someone's sandwich at a cafe, looking really dirty and greasy, as soon as that's not the case anymore, people are also not going to view them negatively.
I would say, tell me what you think, Alex, but I've seen that in Greece, the attitudes of people tend to change about how they feel towards the cats and the dogs when they're neutered, they're treated for parasites, they're looking healthier, they're not skinny, they're not trying to steal food from under the table, as you said. And people tend to change their mindset to wanting to have a more collaborative approach to feed them properly and want them around rather than these like sick and dying animals all the time.
I mean, I sometimes think all the way people homeless humans. I mean, just how the attitudes to homeless humans, you see the parallel there, that they're not worthy of empathy, that they're somehow disgusting or whatever. So it's just the way humans are, I think.
And so talking about that, so that's one of the reasons why we started this podcast, is to talk about some of the ways that we can help cats, but also other animals, not just through rescue, but also through some of the methods that you do, which is like stuff that people can get involved and learn how to do. Like de-stringing is something that people can learn how to do themselves. And we've seen communities of friends in other countries, like in Copenhagen, do the same thing. They've learned a lot from you. And then, you know, I've learned things from you as well. But that process looks a little bit different for avians. They have different health issues and they have different reproductive patterns. So do you have any feelings about what currently the most humane and effective ways to manage pigeon populations could be, and focusing on well-being and welfare, not just like focusing on how many there are, but the fact that they are healthy and well?
Yeah, so that would be then something that needs to be in collaboration with city councils. I think that it's too big a project to expect individuals to be responsible for city pigeon management on that scale. So if we're looking at feral pigeon management in a certain city, then you'd want the city council to be involved with that, the city ecologists, institutions that are stable and have funding. And then what you want to do is always create the conditions, species appropriate conditions, so the animal can live their natural behavior, what's natural to them, for their welfare. And for a feral pigeon, then that means that they have shelter, that they have safe nesting spaces, and that they have species appropriate food, because the feral pigeons are not living in a natural habitat. For instance, in the Netherlands, there's no natural nesting spaces, there's no natural food for them. So we have to provide that for their well-being. And then to see how the animal wants to live. So they're natural, they will be happiest and they will have the best well-being when their natural behaviors are supported. So in that case, that would be dovecotes, because traditionally for thousands of years, they have lived in dovecotes, which mimic a little bit the behavior of the original species. But we can't really draw parallels between feral pigeons and the original species, the rock dove, because they're not genetically a rock dove anymore. You know, that would be like trying to say, well, we have to encourage all dogs to live like wolves. We recognize that they come from wolves and they share a lot of these characteristics, but that doesn't inform how they should live now, because they are fully domesticated animals. So in the case of feral pigeons, that would be indeed what we call the Augsburger model, which is used in Germany, which is the dovecote method of city pigeon management, and this produces healthy pigeons who live according to their natural instincts with a stable population, and also with some medical oversight in case they get sick or injured. So that's what we would want to see.
For anybody who is not familiar with that word, could you tell us what you mean? Do you mean like, is that the same thing as some kind of pigeon coop?
Yeah, the pigeon house, the different types of them. They can be containers, they can be pigeon towers. They different types of them have different pros and cons. But if you look at how city pigeons, what they try to do is if you leave your attic window open, they will go in there and they will nest in there. They're always looking for a little house to go into and to nest and to use as a base. And if you look at sanctuaries where you usually have an indoor and outdoor space, they'll spend about 80% of their time indoors. They prefer that. They'll go out for a little bit of spin maybe, but otherwise they'll spend their time indoors. So these dovecotes are just, let's say a container version is just a big space with nesting boxes everywhere and some places for them to roost and to sit. And the pigeons will hang out there, they'll nest there, they'll eat there, and they'll go in and out perhaps, but that will be their home. And it's very easy to get them accustomed to such a space because they love it, basically. And then you can have good oversight of population. You can also collect data, and you can swap the eggs with fake eggs, and they will just sit on them like normal eggs because they lay so many nests every month at least that if you wouldn't do that, you would have thousands and thousands and thousands of them. And it's also for them very exhausting year round to be feeding babies. So we don't try to eradicate them in this way, but we just keep the population stable, you know. I mean, they will have some successful nests, but they don't need to have, you know, 24 babies a year. So
let's talk about that a little bit more, because this is a concept that Alex and I were discussing a while ago of like, we've all seen different approaches of pigeon population management. And a lot of times that's been like people saying they should be relocated or they should be given food that is laced with like reproductive suppressants, like birth control sort of.
Yeah.
And then when I asked you about this, you were like, actually what they do in Germany is this really cool method of, as you said, establishing some coops, so some safe places for them to be fed a nest, and then intervention in their reproductive cycle so that they are not constantly producing these massive numbers of eggs, which they have been selectively bred to do, just like chickens and ducks and other genetically modified, human modified species. And I actually went to Germany to go visit one of these groups. I think you pronounce their name Hauptstadtauben in Berlin. And they showed me this in real time. So we went out to their flocks. We took a ladder. They climbed the ladder. They checked the nests of the pigeons. And if there were real pigeon eggs, they would replace them with these fake eggs, which they had marked so they knew which ones were fake and which ones were real. Obviously, they checked the eggs if they were fertilized, because you don't want to be disposing of, like, you know, eggs that have little formed baby chickens in them. But this is what they do to, as you said, like, manage the population so they're not growing out of control. And they do this for thousands and thousands and thousands of eggs for many years. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and why that works in terms of managing our populations and having healthier pigeons?
So there different methods have been tried, usually from the point of view of reducing the number of pigeons or getting rid of pigeons. For instance, in Europe, mass killings is very normal. Also in the Netherlands, there are cities like Groningen, which have been gassing thousands of pigeons over the years. Typical all throughout Europe is that hired contractors go out with big nets early in the morning, or they go to nesting spots, they catch them all, and they're taken off to be gassed or whatever. And then other methods that have been tried is catching them and releasing them like somewhere in the middle of nowhere. The pigeons that survive that will fly back right away. A strong adult pigeon will simply fly back to where they came from. So that doesn't work at all. And then recently, of course, there was through this initiative with the corn that is has some medication in it that will produce temporary infertility. They have to keep eating that corn though, so they have to keep on feeding it to them, because it only works for a short time. It will reduce some numbers, but it doesn't do anything for welfare, because the feeding is not geared towards feeding the pigeons who need it. It's mostly geared towards the alpha pigeons, the ones that are likely to nest, the very competitive ones, because the food is given in limited amounts that is going to target the ones that are more likely to nest successfully. So when we're looking at pigeon welfare, the ones that need the food tend to be more the less aggressive pigeons, the weak young ones, the ones that are injured or whatever. So they're not going to benefit from it at all. And also it's only in the summer months. So it's in the winter when they really need food. So it's not geared towards welfare at all. And if you're looking also from the point of view of constantly putting out these chemicals into their environment and predator birds, which eat the pigeons and then will also be affected, then I think it's very questionable. And it's only geared to, let's see if we can somehow reduce the numbers of pigeons. So the only method that actually is also incorporating welfare and is based in welfare is the dovecot method. And they will lay just the same amount of eggs as they would have, or even more if they're getting a good diet and they're safe and all that. They'll be like, hey, let's have more nests. We're not struggling with illness or whatever. But you replace the eggs, at least some of them. I mean, a certain number of babies need to be born every year also to keep them, rooted in the dovecot as well, to really see it as their home. So I know there was one in the Netherlands that reduced their local population from 200 to 40, but we're not trying to do that. That's not the aim of it. So I think that they went too far there, We did some research about the Netherlands, particularly because I was there, the dovecotes that are there and how they've functioned, and there was a lot that left to be desired in how they managed them. But in any case, it's good that they have them. But in this case, also using a dovecote simply to really reduce the population is not ideal. But on the other hand, if you do it right, then it covers all aspects of pigeon welfare. It keeps the numbers stable, or it reduces them even to some extent, if that's what you want. You see older pigeons. Last time I was at a dovecote in Germany, they were pointing out ones that were 20 years old to me.
Oh my God, wow.
And living as sparrows. And you could do a lot of research and data collection as well. And this would be the method that I would like to see adopted everywhere. And I think it is going to come, because we've tried the other methods, and I think that the attitude, the treatment of feral pigeons must have reached a deep point, a rock bottom at a certain point in the last century. And it can only really go up. I think attitudes can only change. At a certain point, people have to understand that feeding bans don't work. For instance, the feeding ban is enough. Other thing they've tried, it literally doesn't work. The data shows it doesn't work, but you do get a lot more suffering, a lot more pigeons scrambling for garbage, a lot more weak and unhealthy pigeons. So yeah, those are the various things that have been tried. Also hunting hawks. Don't know if you saw recently, there was an interesting post, I think I linked you to it, where they were discussing how this one method of trying to get contractors in with hawks to areas where there are feral pigeons, see if we can reduce the numbers. It doesn't work, but what it also causes a lot of suffering. It's not a nice way to die. And also when a hawk grabs a pigeon, they may have a nest and the babies die too. All these hunting and killing methods, there's an exponential suffering that goes on beyond that pigeon. Their partners left, their chicks starved to death. So just from a point of view of animal welfare, that's not acceptable. And there were other reasons also. Using hawks was just incredibly expensive for what it does, and it doesn't really reduce the numbers of pigeons. I don't know if I answered your question exactly, but
yeah, definitely.
Okay,
definitely. So. And I've seen these posts from different governmental organizations talking about how, yeah, they should enforce feeding bans and stuff and how that's going to help. But you're right. We've seen all of these different types of approach to managing animals that haven't worked. And we see these parallels with the way governments have managed cat and dog populations as well. So mm-hmm. A lot of the things that you've said have been tried for other animal species in other places. We see culling all the time, especially in relation to large sports events where a bunch of tourists are coming and they want, the streets to look clean, or rounding them up and putting them in shelters, or in the case of places in the EUE, rounding them up and putting them in the desert. And this is exactly why we focus on population management methods that actually focus on well-being and actually address what they think is the problem, which is these large numbers of animals. And we've seen spay and neuter be really successful. And we've seen, therefore, more groups implementing spay and neuter for cats and dogs. And similarly, it sounds like what you're saying with egg replacing and coops, like providing safe spaces for them to live and be managed for pigeons, this seems to be like a better approach as well. So it's cool to see those parallels between the species.
Exactly. I don't think that we're ever going to get policies made only for the point of view of welfare. So that's not even an argument point, really, other than just a general moral obligation not to cause suffering. For instance, if you're arguing against using hawks, you can successfully argue that the amount of suffering that that causes, exponential suffering with the chicks, for instance, is it doesn't justify that method. I think that in a developed country where there's discussion about sentience and all that, then these arguments are valid. But I think that when we're advocating for city pigeon management, we're going to have to advocate from the point of view of that we want to reduce the nuisance and reduce the number of pigeons, keep them off the streets. These are the arguments we use, not, oh, we want to have healthy, happy pigeons because they don't care about that. So, it's always going to be from the point of view of how can we reduce the nuisance or reduce the number of pigeons, not have any more complaints from citizens. That's another thing. So that needs to be our angle.
We do need to take a quick break and we'll be back in a second.
You know the expression, cats have 9 lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio. PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back with Billy talking about pigeons. Billy, so people like me who live in cities come across a lot of pigeons that sometimes are injured. And one big question that I had when I knew we were going to interview you is, what can an individual like me do if they see a pigeon suffering from string foot? How do you determine if the pigeon is able to be rehabbed and return, or if they need a sanctuary long term?
So what I was always asking people to do is to monitor their local flock. I mean, it has to be doable and it has to be within your own capacity to assess a situation. So it tends to go wrong when people try to do things that are way beyond their own capacity and own ability to even assess if intervention is needed. So the citizen's mandate, as it were, is to identify your local flock that might be just outside your house at the square or on a bench just nearby where you live. And when you're having your Sunday coffee or whatever, just have a look at them. Take a little bag of food with you. I don't have it here to show you, but a little bit bag of birdseed. Throw a little bit. If they're feeding bands, they, of course, don't do that in a way that's going to attract attention, but just a little bit so they come and hang around. And then just observe them. And you're going to see a lot of pigeons that have loose strings around their feet. They got caught up in a string, and they're struggling maybe a little bit to walk because their feet are tied together, or they just have this string. And if you learn how to pick them up and remove the string, then you've already helped a lot, because prevention is much better than cure. If you wait until their feet are like swollen up and painful, then a lot of work needs to go into it. But if we get there before that happens, particularly pigeons that have their feet tied together, which is a really nasty situation to be in, it happens to them a lot, then we're going to already make so much difference with very little effort. So that's the citizen's mandate. Once you start observing the pigeons, you're going to start to see more and more. And you're going to have questions like, is that normal? You know, what do I see there? We're going to find one that's sick or has just been hit by a bike or whatever. And then if the pigeon cannot fly, you do need to bring them in. And then beforehand, what you might like to do is research the help in your city. Like, what are you going to do if you just got a pigeon? you pick him up, he can't fly, or he's very sick, what are you going to do? It's good to know about that beforehand. So get a trusted list of contacts or shelters or whatever. It will depend on your area. And we're actually working on a resources, like a whole list of all the different help that we've kind of checked out that we know is reliable in all the cities. But till now, I'm only more familiar with the Netherlands. So in that case, if you've done that, you've already done so much more than most people. You worked preventatively. You're going to be there for an acute situation where their life really depends on you at that moment, grabbing them, wrapping them up in a cloth, calling your trusted contact or whatever, and getting them into safety. So, and that prevents a lot of suffering. So I would say, put it right there. But say that you're someone with a bird phobia, or that you really don't have any time to go out and look at flocks. There's so many other things you can do, political, watchdog. Like, much of it goes on with pigeons, happens because nobody cares to investigate. No one asks any questions. Like, for instance, the demolition of nest sites that happens very often. They can just go and water hose, you know, 50 baby pigeons, throw them in the garbage because no one cares, no one notices, even though actually if there was attention on it, they couldn't get away with it. And that's just one example. Netting, which is trapping birds in places. There's so many areas that you can be involved that don't actually involve handling a pigeon or even being outside. So I would say education. I mean, you can spend, how many millions do pest control companies spend on getting number one on Google that they can say stuff about how dangerous pigeons are, which is basically misinformation. I mean, they take something completely out of context and they frame it in a way to make everyone very afraid that they're going to get sick because there's a pigeon living in the tree next door to them or whatever on their balcony. So we can combat this misinformation. We can do campaigns, we can do petitions. It's just, I have a whole list. So if somebody, I can put it in the chat, or if somebody just messages me, I'll give them a whole list of ideas. There's probably many more also that you can be involved with, 1 hour a week or less, even just how much time you have, on whatever capacity you have. I mean, in Germany, there's someone who does this fantastic art around pigeons with a little message. So educational, inspirational, artistic. I think that it's just endless the amount of ways you can contribute. And I would say raising awareness and changing hearts and minds and changing the conversation is such an important part of it as well. So there's just so many ways people can get involved. But when it comes to Stringfoot, I would like to see people just monitoring their local flocks. And I guarantee that if they start doing that, it just will go from there. There's not a, just starting with things that are really, really doable, really bite size. Oh, there's a pigeon with a little loose string tied. You know, I'm just going to grab him, going to just cut that string or just unwind it with my fingers.
So I have a question for people like me who've never really been around pigeon. I mean, never actually touched a pigeon. How do you catch a pigeon?
Well, it will be different depending on where people are. If you're in a very urban environment where the pigeons are used to being fed, they come right to you. Now, it doesn't make it necessarily easy to grab them if you've never handled a bird before, but it is not difficult once you know how. I mean, if you know someone that has pigeons, I would often say, you know, try to find someone that has pigeons, just get used to handling them, because then it's all going to be a lot more easy. If you, in every city, there are pigeon keepers, people with pet pigeons. If you know how to handle it, when we did our, I used to do these Stringfoot events where we'd invite people, would go out on a mission looking for pigeons, and I would teach them how to do the de-stringing. One thing we would always do is grab a pigeon. Yeah, poor pigeon didn't want to be used for this, but still, for the greater good, I would show everyone how to hold the pigeon. And that already makes it so much easier, you know, if you know how to hold a bird. So, yeah, I would say that people can best learn how to catch 101 so that they can see where they're going wrong. But I do have a full list of instructions that I send people, videos. It really depends how, I wouldn't want to use the word competent, but, you know, some people have more talent than others for getting the hang of it, you know, and some people will have more natural fear of holding an animal. So it's got to be different. But yeah, when it gets to pigeons that will not come anywhere close, there are some places where they're not so used to humans, and then it's going to be more difficult. And then we're maybe looking at traps and stuff.
We add the video in the description for people to see how to catch a pigeon.
You want to add a video?
Yeah, we'll add a video in the description of the episode.
I mean, there are many different ways. People catch with nets, people catch with traps, people catch with, I think when you catch with the hand, that's the least stressful for the animal at that moment if you do it right. So if that is possible, then I would recommend that. A net is quite stressful, but sometimes you have...
I think like just like with catching cats, I mean, like you said, you do kind of have to practice at it, and we all screw it up at first. You know, there are many cats that got away when I first started practicing. But yeah, I think, as you said, some people use equipment. So when I was in Berlin, they were using like a long net to catch them with like a long stick with a net on the end. And then I was also thinking about another option, because I don't have a net with me, but we often use like dropper traps, which are like these big metal boxes we can drop down over an animal. And a few weeks ago, I was just walking here in Athens, and I saw a bird with string loosely tied around both feet. It's like, right, okay, I got to run to the shop, get some chips. And I just started sprinkling it on the ground, because I've seen, you know, you sprinkle it on the ground and then they come over and they start to eat, and then you grab them with your hand. Well, this particular pigeon was very wary of me, and others would come close, but she wouldn't. So I thought, right, I'm going to run home and get my dropper so I can like drop trap the pigeon. But when I came back, she had already flown off, because she was like strong enough. You know, the string wasn't tight around her feet. It wasn't impeding her walking. But yeah, I mean, sometimes we can get creative. And as you said, if we are able to grab them by hand, I've often just grabbed like a piece of cardboard or a piece of paper or like a paper bag, something to completely cover them so that they don't freak out and flap around and hurt themselves. Also, covering the head is usually like a way to help keep them calm, right? But I've also seen one thing you've said is not to put them on their back unless you know them very well. Mm. Would you say to be cautious about that?
If you put a bird flat on their back, this can be, it keeps them very quiet because they feel quite uncomfortable in that position, but it isn't a safe position because of their air sacs and their breathing. So, and it's also not really necessary. So if you're holding a pigeon, if you're with two people, one person can hold a pigeon and the other one can remove the strings. But generally you're alone. In that case, what I do is I always cover their head with a cloth, which they can't see anything. This makes them go quiet right away because birds are very visual. And then you will hold them slightly on their side. So it'll be like a 45 degree with the head higher than the body. That's a safe position. You hold them really up against your body so they can't move. And sometimes I squeeze their tail and wingtips between my knees as well. So they're completely incapacitated there. And then you can work on their feet. And and the thing with catching them, though, is that when you come across, like you said, when you come across, you're not going to be having a trap with you most of the time. So... yeah, you got to be able to do also the same with a net. I don't carry around a net with me all the time. So if you're going out specifically to do that, to go catch pigeons, or then you can bring all the equipment. But when you come across one, then you're not going to have that with you. So the things you can have with you are easy to carry, a little bit of food to use as bait, and something to cut the strings off. That I never go out of the house without those things. But having a trap with you is only if you're going specifically, like, I'm going to go there and I'm going to see if there's any birds that need help. And I got my trap with me.
Okay, yeah. We are running a bit out of time, but I would like, Billy, for you to give some advice. So for people who want to get involved and help pigeons, anything you want to share with them, like some little tips they can take, actions they can take.
Yeah, so it's going to be a little bit location specific, depending where people are. And they can always contact me also for ideas, depending on their location. Like I said, start small, stay within your capacity. Don't start doing stuff that is beyond your ability to assess, because we also don't want to cause harm. We don't want to take a healthy bird away who maybe has babies there in a nest waiting to be fed if they don't need to be taken away. So a surefire way is learn how to safely catch and handle a bird. You don't want to harm them when you're catching them, and remove loose strings when you see it in a safe way. If it looks too complicated for you, then you can just ask people who have more experience to assess and see what, I mean, if the string is really wrapped around and someone's like, I don't know how to take this off, then, you know, make sure you can reach out to someone who has the experience for that, or limit yourself just to the ones that you can do for now. And experience grows, you know, you get better and better at it. We want to do as much good as we can and not at any harm if we can avoid it. My advice would be, depending on your capacity, get involved in some way that is for you rewarding, comfortable, you feel good doing it, you feel confident doing it, and you, that way you make a difference. And it might be hands-on, and it might be purely educational or online or whatever thing you already do, like if you're an artist or if you're a singer or whatever, you can do something for pigeons there too. So So many, many, many different ways to get involved.
Do you want to tell everybody where they can find you?
Well, they can email me if they want for specific advice. There's also social media, Instagram, Facebook. There's a foundation page on Facebook. I would just like to add, if someone has an emergency and they found a sick pigeon, then try not to use social media only as your only thing, because sometimes time is so time sensitive. If I'm not looking at my phone and I don't see it for a few hours, it could be too late. So in any case, if anyone ever has an emergency situation, it's best to send many, many different messages out and also include your own contact details rather than just a single DM or something like that. So just have to add that as a traumatized person. They can email, social media. I'll help wherever I can, and I'll advise for it. And I can sometimes put them in touch with other people that I know who are doing stuff and might be able to help them.
Billy, can you mention your social media and your email so people, when they listen, they can...
NL is on Instagram and Facebook, pigeonrescue.nl is, and then my name, billysavage at Gmail. People can, I think that's easy to remember, can email me there. I think that's enough really for now.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Billy. It was very insightful, and we really appreciate you coming into the show to, talk about pigeons. And thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for highlighting.
Yeah. And thank you so much to everybody who's listening to us. We're so excited to be on this adventure. We're really happy to be able to talk about so many different species, and would love to hear about what you have to say about pigeon overpopulation and hear about your experience. So send us a DM on either Saving Lives with 2 A's or Travel Animal Rescue on Instagram. See you all at our next episode. And in the meantime, stay out of trouble and keep trapping to save the streets one animal at a time.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.